Hello, welcome to today's reading of the Pantograph. My name is Sharon, and it's Wednesday, March 18th, 2026. We will begin our reading on the front page of the paper with an article, It's My Duty as an American. Voters pick candidates, decide referendums, and speak their mind. With references to civic duty and a desire to be heard in turbulent times, Central Illinois voters explained Tuesday why they turned out to cast ballots in Illinois' 2026 primary election. Voters had to choose candidates to run in the November 3rd election for Congress, governor, and an array of other state and local offices. They also had some referendums to decide, such as a bond issue for a Haworth area fire station. Danelle Hetrick, 54, of Bloomington, showed up early to vote at the YWCA of McLean County in Bloomington, and she said she wishes more people would take the opportunity to vote and make their voice heard. You're choosing the candidates to represent you in the general election. So that's just as important as a general election, in my opinion, Hetrick said. You have to get to know your candidates. Put a little bit of time into it, you know, and then go try to meet them, talk with them, get to know who they are, which can be hard when you're putting on a political face, but you know, we have to do our best. Bloomington resident Albert Starkursky said he votes for people who listen to him. I just vote for the people that I feel represent me, not a party or a group of people or some outside interest, he said. Kathy Schluter has been an election judge for 9 years. This year, she was stationed at the YWCA of McLean County at 1201 North Hershey Road in Bloomington. As of 8:30 a.m. Tuesday, the YWCA had seen about 24 voters since they opened at 6 a.m., which Schluter said is small compared to a general election. They weren't expecting a huge turnout, she said, but expected to have more people trickle in during lunchtime and then after work. People need to be involved, Schluter said, and they don't often realize how their vote affects their community. I just like just making sure being very visible and making sure to show the public that we do run fair and impartial elections and to answer people's questions or concerns when they come in here based on something that they've heard in the media, just to show them our process, Schluter explained. And some people have been surprised at the process. They had no idea how things are done. So that's really why I decided to do it. It's just to show that the process is here and the process works. McLean County Clerk Kathy Michael and Stephanie Hanner, Interim Director of the Bloomington Election Commission, both said all was running smoothly Tuesday morning. Knock on wood, so far all the polls opened on time. Very slow turnout so far, but it's steady. No equipment errors have been reported as of yet, Michael said. The Bloomington Election Commission had implemented a new scanning machine at its downtown office, and Hanner confirmed no equipment issues had been reported by about noon. And all the judges and all the voters really like it, she said. Hanner also credited her team with making the work go smoothly, saying they were an excellent team of election judges. Kathy Cleason, lead election judge at Haworth Christian Church, has been an election judge for 15 years. It runs in her family, she said, with her parents, aunts, and uncles participating too. She also was excited as 3 students from Haworth High School were election judges this year. Cleason said things were looking promising on Tuesday morning as they hit 100 voters by 9:21 a.m. and were expecting to see more people come in around the lunch rush and between 4 and 5 p.m. She said they had a line of people waiting at the door when they opened at 6 a.m. She noted things were slow and steady. I wouldn't say we would have a rush or anything, but we're not just twiddling our thumbs. Voters in Haworth were voting on a referendum asking residents to approve $4 million bond for a new station for the Randolph Fire Protection District. And by 11 a.m., the county clerk said Haworth's polling place had the largest turnout in the county. Cleason said she believes people have been more interested in voting generally, especially in the last two elections, but the referendum was drawing out specific voters. If you're going to have your voice heard, you might as well have it heard all along the way. So if you want a choice, you got to use your voice, and that's a vote, she said. I think everyone needs to come out, and you can't complain one way or the other with the outcome of the election. If you don't participate, be quiet. But come on out, have your voice heard, and all of us count. One vote, one person, that's the basis of our democracy. Longtime Haworth resident Carol Limer, 66, said she was motivated to come out and vote Tuesday, specifically for the referendum, though she typically always votes. I think we need it, so we have better EMT, emergency medical technician response, and we needed a new station for a long time, Limer said, noting those who don't vote can't complain one way or the other. Bill Kiesling, retired deputy chief who served 30 years with the Randolph Fire Protection District, showed up on Tuesday as part of his civic duty. And while he did not share his stance on the referendum, he said it was important to encourage everybody to vote one way or the other. Fred Scheel, 64, of Haworth, said he did not have particular feelings about the referendum, but he feels voting is something everyone should practice. I didn't know how important it was when my mother made me register at 18, you know, and even in my early 20s. I'm trying to make my way in the world. But now that I've gotten older and I see the changes in the darkness over the country, that's why I'm here to vote, he said. Luke Chubbuck, 18, of Haworth, was a first-time voter on Tuesday, and he was motivated by various issues, he said, including economic issues, women's rights, and immigration enforcement. Not really liking the stuff that I've been seeing recently. Yeah, so I think a lot needs to be done, and we need new people in power, he said, noting he's always been very vocal about his opinions online and found it frustrating when he wasn't old enough to make his opinions heard in past elections. He said a lot of people have told him that primary elections don't matter. But if you look into the candidates, you can find people that support similar beliefs you have. Bloomington resident Tara Valentine said she also was motivated to vote Tuesday because of the current political climate. I find that some of what I'm seeing in our culture and our country's politics frankly scares me, and I would like to see some real progressive change, she said. I'm aware that it's my civic duty to make my voice heard and do my part. Civic engagement is one of the core values at Illinois State University, said University President Andover Tarhule, who was at the Bone Student Center to cast his ballot. This is a big part of how you assure your civic engagement and your civic duty, he said. So I'm really proud of the students and the fact that they're coming out to vote. Student turnout Tuesday morning at ISU has been the biggest in recent years, said McLean County Election Judge Celeste Brennan. Typically, we don't see a lot of people until the afternoon, she said. They were hoping to see about 100 by noon, Brennan said. Natalie Feister, an ISU freshman in nursing, originally from Elgin, voted for the first time on Tuesday. It's my duty as an American to participate in any elections I can, she said. That duty means a lot in what feels like a particularly meaningful election cycle, Tarhule said. It's the most important thing we can do as citizens, he said. This is something people fight and die for in other countries, the opportunity to pick your leaders. And this year feels more than almost any other year. This is the only way you can really express your views in terms of who you support and the kinds of ideas that they espouse. For complete election results, you can find additional coverage if you visit pantograph.com. Bloomington City Council. Water tops $112 million list of city capital projects. The city of Bloomington plans to invest about $111.7 million, or roughly 30% of its total budget, in capital projects during the 2027 fiscal year. During a special city council meeting on Monday, the city's department heads laid out their pending capital projects as well as key initiatives for the upcoming year. The budget for the fiscal year starting May 1st, 2026 is up for adoption in April. The most significant feature of the $370.5 million spending plan is an historic $82 million investment in water infrastructure projects. This represents roughly 281% increase over the last fiscal year. Bloomington City Manager Jeff Juergens said about 75% of the projects are mandated by law, including lead service line replacements and critical system-wide repairs. The city will be using revenue generated from the water rate increases authorized a few years ago to pay for this work. Under the state's Lead Service Line Replacement and Notification Act, which was signed into law in 2021, municipalities must submit a comprehensive inventory and replacement plan for all of their lead service lines by April 15, 2027. Bloomington Water Director Brett Lucian said most of the capital work is dedicated to system-wide improvements. This is actually going to bring our system, our transmission mains, and some of our pump stations up to today's standards, Lucian said. A lot of our transmission mains and pump stations were built back in 1929, so this is actually doing improvements that bring everything into compliance and brings our transmission mains up to today's pressures. Bloomington Fire Chief Corey Mathney said several station repairs are scheduled for fiscal 2027, including a retaining wall replacement at station number one at 310 North Lee Street, architecture and engineering work for station number four at 1704 South Morris Avenue, and a $550,000 roof replacement at station number three at 2301 East Empire Street. Mathney said station three not only houses firefighters, but also a number of engines and ambulances. The building has undergone a series of recent additions, including a kitchen remodel. This new project is meant to ensure the long-term use of the space. This is a planned life cycle replacement that protects the facility and keeps the station fully operational for years to come, Mathney said. Bloomington Police Chief Jamal Symington said the only major capital project this year is improvement to the department's outdoor firing range for $100,000. In the area of other key city initiatives, Kelly Pfeiffer, Director of Development Services for the city, said her department will create an economic development website for the department that specifically talks about upcoming projects and the history of Bloomington. She said the website also will compile customized data accessible by potential developers and other businesses. If they're looking at Bloomington, they can figure out how to compare us and our demographic, so we'd be embedding that in our new website, Fiverr said. The department would also need an economic development strategy, which hasn't been drafted in a decade, and additional legal support because development agreements often require special counsel. Cordell Patrick, Director of Community Impact and Enhancement for Bloomington, outlined several key housing initiatives during the meeting. The city will invest $520,000 from the Community Development Block Grant Program and the Illinois Housing Development Authority to provide critical home repairs to low and moderate income homeowners to ensure livable conditions. A program to reduce lead-based paint hazards in Bloomington homes would cost $200,000. Another $322,000 would be invested into a demolition program for structurally unsound or dangerous vacant buildings. Mose Rickey, Director of Public Works, also highlighted his department's $750,000 proposal to fund a four-person crew that could operate a street paver for pothole patching 28 weeks out of the year. Rickey said there are more than 20 identified areas of need in the city. There are going to be other needs that pop up, Rickey said. There's other potholes that are unidentified, and being mobile like this allows us to address those. For more information on the proposed fiscal 2027 budget, visit bloomingtonil.gov/departments/finance/annual budget. Normal Town Council. Town okays budget, eyes water rates. The Normal Town Council on Monday approved a fiscal 2027 budget with about 11.5% more spending than in the current year's plan, talked about the Uptown Underpass, and heard water-related rates will have to increase. The budget for the year, starting April 1st, calls for $235.2 million in spending and $213.9 million in revenue. Kathleen Lorenz was the only council member present to vote against the budget, citing her concerns about the status of the Uptown Underpass project, economic development spending, and fire department-related expenditures. Member Rory Roarbridge was not in attendance. The $21.2 million deficit in operating expenditures is due to funding for additional transportation projects, such as road work and the $40.3 million Uptown Underpass, which recently lost its initial contractor and is currently being reevaluated, officials said. Finance Director Andrew Hune said the shortfall will be covered by money previously set aside for capital projects and other reserves. I would not characterize it as a structural deficit or an operational problem, Hune said. I know it looks a little odd to see that kind of deficit spending, but you have to remember that those funds are from capital-related funds we built up over the years. Other capital projects related to water, sewer, and stormwater infrastructure are also contributing to the 11.5% increase, and the town is considering rate increases in the near future to help fund those needs. Inflationary pressures on operating costs and increasing infrastructure needs will outpace the revenue being generated under the existing rate structure, according to town documents. In June 2026, ahead of the town's budget process for fiscal 2028, The staff will present the council with an updated long-term financial plan outlining projected requirements for the town's infrastructure and a recommended rate structure to generate revenue to meet those needs, Hune said. The council already approved a 2% annual increase to both water and sewer rates in 2024, but the stormwater rate has not changed since 2006. With the 2% annual increase, the current fiscal year saw the water fee per 1,000 gallons consumed increase from $6.97 to $7.11, and the system maintenance fee grew from $6.35 to $6.48 per month, according to the council documents. At the same time, the sewer fee per 1,000 gallons went from $3.13 to $3.19, and the system maintenance fee grew from $4.34 to $4.43 per month this fiscal year. This has resulted in about $200,000 in additional revenue for the water fund and $100,000 more for the sewer fund. As for other changes from the drafted budget offered in January to now, the town increased revenue estimates by $1.6 million, based largely on more money expected from local and state sales taxes. As a result, the town is expected to increase its contingency fund by $1 million. Lorenz, who had already voted against the underpass project in the past, said the project was at the top of her list of concerns, followed by the town's funding to the Bloomington Normal Economic Development Council and to fire personnel. "I think budgets are ultimately a statement of priorities, and there are simply just too many fundamental priorities in this budget that I have serious concerns with," Lorenz said. Additionally, two public commenters shared their own concerns about the underpass project, arguing it has gone over budget and will continue to present problems for the town. Millstone Weber of St. Charles, Missouri, whose $32 million bid was accepted last year, withdrew from the project January 26th. The town is now in talks with Normal-based P.J. Hoer about reviving its previously rejected bid, which was $32.2 million when the project was approved in October 2025. The total cost of the underpass project, as approved by the council in October 2025, was $40.3 million, which is approximately 42% more than the previous estimated cost of $28.3 million, and it's three times higher than the $13 million estimate from 2017. Normal Public Works Director Ryan Otto previously said the town is currently waiting on P.J. Hoer to submit a renewed bid and is hopeful that it will be comparable to its original bid amount. Councilmember Scott Preston also criticized the underpass project and said he plans to vote against any future proposal for the project. "Personally, I don't know what else is needed for that project to die a slow death, but I would be glad to vote against it if it comes up in another iteration to us with another contractor, as I have in the past," Preston said. Lorenz also questioned a $100,000 expenditure to the Bloomington Normal Economic Development Council after other council members expressed support for the funding amid uncertainty about the future. President and CEO Patrick Hoban resigned Friday to take a new position with Ameren. "My hope in supporting the budget is we will allot that full $100,000 to the Economic Development Council Councilmember Andy Byers said, "I understand there's been a lot of conversation in the community about the council. I continue to believe that a strong council is very valuable for the community." Normal Mayor Chris Coos expressed a similar sentiment and added, "There are options for what both the town and Bloomington can do moving forward with the Economic Development Council. Conversations have included contributing half of the budgeted money now and holding the rest for later. I think it would be prudent of us to sit with the $100,000 until we see what the executive committee and the board of the Economic Development Council come forward for the plan to hire a new director and the direction that they want to go in," Coos said. Lorenz later added that the discussion around economic development and the funding for it was very vague and wanted it to be clarified. As for the fire and emergency medical services, Lorenz said she did not see any funding directed toward a new community need study after controversy about whether to close the College Avenue fire station or money for technology to help support personnel. She also asked why the town had published a job posting for an assistant fire chief prior to the budget being approved. In response to the technology question, Innovation and Technology Director Vasudha Gahajri said there is nothing specific in this budget related to traffic signal technology that would speed emergency vehicles through intersections, but as staff members look at the upcoming year, they plan to bring something more as more research is conducted. Normal Fire Chief Mick Hummer said there is always new technology included when the department purchases new equipment and that the town is in the beginning stages of talking about the preemption technology. As for the assistant fire chief, city manager Pam Reese said the final decision to hire is up to her, and it is typical to post the position early for such a competitive hire because the process lasts through the fiscal year. "It does take time, so we have regularly posted positions, and they're not filled until some point later in the fiscal year. And if we choose not to fill that position moving forward, or any of our positions, then it's no harm, no foul," Reese said. "We wouldn't spend any money and wouldn't fill it, but you know it takes time to recruit, so we post prior to the fiscal year." Hummer added that in addition to the job posting, the department has already been working to hire 7 new firefighters to accommodate upcoming retirements. Today's Flick Fact question: you're reading a newspaper that survived in a climate where what percentage of Illinois' local newspapers have closed since 2005? And the answer, 48% have sadly died. Nearly half of Illinois' local newspapers have disappeared in the past 2 decades, the 9th largest statewide decline in the nation, according to the 2025 State of Local News report from Northwestern University. Nationwide, the U.S. has lost nearly 3,500 newspapers since 2005. Which makes every surviving local newspaper a bit more remarkable. We'll take a short break now and then return with the second half of the Pantograph for March 18th, 2026. Please stay tuned.